Blog Talk Radio.
Hotep, welcome to the Care to Read Room. You have your own Onyeka 7 in the house, your advisor, the one you certainly need, and your advocate, the one you want. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you to another segment of Care to Read, which is underwritten by Project 2019. And you normally don't hear me on a Saturday. I thought I'd do a special thing during the holiday and go ahead and finish out the month and do the weekends as well. So I'm off sabbatical, so if I'm a little off course or appear to be somewhere else in another world, then you'll know why, because I'm used to being off on sabbatical. And once again, I'd like to welcome you here to our show. Our segment that we're on today is dealing with the feminine nature and reclaiming the feminine nature of religion and medicine. And that includes the female, if any of you are wondering who am I talking about. I want you to join me as I go over to my book corner right now and featuring a special book about the women and the shaman women and what were they like. And those women could read oracles. And were they a matriarchic society? If you have been listening in and joining this segment and all of our features and our sessions on demand, you can see we have been invoking the spirits of Mary Magdalene. We started off with a two-part segment on Mary Magdalene, and we finished up yesterday talking about Mary Magdalene and the man she loved. And if we really, really would like to expound upon that, we'll take our studies a little bit further and we'll begin to start researching in those areas pertaining to Mary Magdalene's shaded background. And we found out that Mary Magdalene really was not a whore, and that there were several other women who had the name of Mary, but the Mary that we referenced to was the one that basically was a follower of Jesus, one of his disciples, I might add. And ladies and gentlemen, if you would care to read, you could go over into our demand on tape, and you can find that segment and talk about it. Once again, I'd like to acknowledge our guests in the audience and say hello. And then we're going to go to commercial break, because you know we have to do some house cleaning right after Thanksgiving. Good evening. You're in the atmosphere. Hello.
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 Hello. Who am I speaking to?
Sheila from Columbus, Ohio.
Hello, Sheila. How are you this evening?
Doing great.
Just great. Thank you so much for joining us, Sheila. And you're going to be in for a treat this evening. We're going to go to commercial break, Sheila, and we'll be right back at you in the atmosphere, because we know it is the power of faith that gives us the ability to get our strength. Ladies and gentlemen, if you will pause with me for station identification as we go to the power of faith.
Every day, from the moment I wake, there are thoughts that stay on my mind. Is there really a way to keep faith?
That gives us the ability to have strength to go on. And ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you once again to the Care to Read Room. You want to lock that dial in at 646-478-0270. And we have a listening guest in the audience. We have Mrs. Sheila Bozer this evening. We want to welcome Sheila Bozer from Ohio, Columbus, Ohio. Sheila, just welcome, and we're grateful that you're here this evening. We're going to proceed with our ceremony. We do a special acknowledgement and ritual for our traditional heritage for African-American history, and this is an African-centered room where we do acknowledge our ancestors, we pour libations, and pay homage to our deceased loved ones and acknowledging them as if they never left the family. I am going to give permission to speak from an elder right now. I see an elder over here. Elder, do I have permission to speak?
Yes, by all means, you have permission to speak.
Thank you so much, Elder. And I'm going to go and get purified and get ready for the show. Baba, is the purification ready?
Purification is ready.
Okay. We cannot greet the Almighty with a still face before prayer is conducted. I pour libations to the west. I pour libations to the east. I pour libations to the south. And I pour libations to the north. And we allow the water to hit the ground for the benefit of fertilizing the ground so that when the word hits, the word will take root and spring up. Ladies and gentlemen, I've asked you to stand to your feet now. You are now standing on holy ground. And to all of those who are in the audience, you can participate in this particular part of the ceremony called the Talking Cure. This is where we tap into the energy and to the frequency and allowing our needs to be met. This is where we call the spirit to be here to assist and aid us and helping us with all manners of illness and desires that we need in our family. Ladies and gentlemen, as you stand to your feet, we call on our heroes and sheroes at this point. And acknowledging all of our heroes that have gone on before us, we understand that we stand on their shoulders. And that in standing on their shoulders, we have to remember that they are the ones that give us the strength. They laid the foundation. Because it was them who went through the middle passage, and them who laid the foundation. It is these family members and loved ones who acknowledge the fact that we have a heritage, we have a culture, and we acknowledge that heritage and culture today by calling their name. I like to call on the name of Harriet Tubman, and I say, Ashe, I like to call on the name of Booker T. Washington, and I say, ah, Shay. I like to call on the name of Chancellor Williams, and we say, ah, Shay. So be it, so let it be done. I like to call on Nina Simone, ah, Shay. I like to call on Dr. Carruthers, ah, Shay. I like to call on Leontine Price, ah, Shay. Nat Turner, ah, Shay. I like to call on Langston Hughes, ah, Shay. Dr. Martin Luther King, ah, Shay. Coretta Scott King, ah, Shay. Malcolm X, ah, Shay. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, ah, Shay. We like to call on Madam C.J. Walker, ah, Shay. So be it, so let it be done. We then acknowledge our personal ancestors, our personal family members who cannot be with us, who are not here physically, but we keep them in our hearts forever because their spirits can never die. We like to call on our eldest relatives, and we say, Ashe the Shane Lily, Ashe. Tommy T. Harvey, Ashe. We like to call on Clara Jenkins, Ashe. Robert Jenkins, Ashe. We like to call on Mary Lou Hawkins, Ashe. We like to call Tommy Harvey, Ashe. We like to call Elijah Day, Ashe. Lucille Day, Ashe. Emmanuel Day, Ashe. We like to call Isa Lily, Ashe. Nisha Lily, Ashe. Sam Lily, Ashe. George Lily, Ashe. We say Michelle Harvey, Ashe, and Michael Harvey, Ashe. Tom Harvey, Ashe. Tommy Pete Harvey, Ashe. We say so be it, so let it be done. We ask our loved ones to allow us to stand on their shoulders because it's because of their shoulders that we're able to see. And because of the foundation they laid, we have a culture, we have a heritage, and we acknowledge our roots as African Americans. The one question we ask is to be or not to be African. That is the question today, ladies and gentlemen. We'd like to thank you for being a part of the talk with you. And now as the frequencies rise, we know that this is the time to get your needs met. This is the time to get healing. I sense that there's somebody that's looking for a healing in their body, in their spiritual body, in their physical mind. Tap in, I say. I sense that there's a child that doesn't want to be wayward anymore, a child that wants to go home and be with his family and reconnect. I say, tap in, young man. I sense that there is a mother who wants to find a husband to help her bridge the gap between her children. Mother, tap in. Your husband is in the atmosphere. I sense that there is an institution that doesn't want to preach any heresy anymore. I sense that there's an institution that has found the truth and wants to tell their people the truth. I say, tap in, ministers, and get a touch from God today. I sense that there are people in the audience that are looking for a way out, an escape. There is an escape, though. The lamb was already laid for you. It is the ultimate sacrifice today. Tap in, I say. Your sacrifice is here. There's a ram in the bush for you. I sense that there are loved ones who have not been talking, and they have been abrasive to each other, and they have been distant. But today is the day to tap in to get reconnected to your loved ones. I sense that the frequencies and vibrations that are being sent out have been sent out in the airways to heal the lame and the sick. It is up to the living to stay in touch with the dead. It is up to the living to bridge the gap between our loved ones that have gone on. We know their energy can never die, and their frequency vibrates on. And we said, let the frequency vibrate on as we continue to summon the Spirit, the Holy Ghost, to hear people. The Holy Ghost is what picks you up and what turns you around and guides you. And we know it's not some fictitious ghost. We've studied and we know who that ghost is. Tap in today, I say. Because we are spirit. We don't walk after the flesh. We walk after spirit. Now walk in the spirit so you won't be deceived by the lust of the flesh. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank you for for going all the way with me today on the Talking Cure. And that completes our segment of the Talking Cure. I'd like to thank you so much for being a part of the Talking Cure with us. Now let's get ready to go into the sanctuary as the song begins to speak. We're going in two by two, grabbing each other's hand and walking into the sanctuary. Lord, help prepare me to be a sanctuary. Tried and true, I want to be a sanctuary. Lord, prepare me to be a sanctuary. Tried and true, a sanctuary. Grabbing hands two by two, three by three. Come on in quickly and take your seats, ladies and gentlemen. Finding your places. Take your seat in the sanctuary. We are an institution. We are the sanctuary. We know that we were created for religion. Religion wasn't created for the black man. We thank you this opportunity to come before you. Everyone, take their seat quickly. Quickly, hurry, take your seat. Take your seat, ladies and gentlemen. Children, take your seat. Allowing the elders to go before you. Elders, take your proper places. Children in the center, take your places. Take your places, and thank you so very much for being cooperative on this holiday season as we give Thanksgiving, and we continue to give thanks for all that the Almighty has done for us. We continue to raise him up. We continue to acknowledge that we're nothing in our own strength, but because of God breathing breath into our beings and giving us life, we were able to communicate and to cooperatively work with God on one accord. So when we are praying, we are affirming that we are going to assist God and aid God in all that we attempt to change in our life. So you can be a participatory in changing your life. Whatever has manifested in your life, you have spoken into existence. And whatever is not right in your life, you must speak it out of existence. Not just by name it and claim it, not just by affirming it, but by living it, sitting with God, meditating, allowing God to speak to you and give you direction for your life. You can do it, ladies and gentlemen. You can do it because you are the spirit and the example of God. And with God having his roots down in you and his spirit in you, you can overcome anything with God. Nothing is impossible with God. You are an overcomer. Now be an overcomer today. Thank you so very much, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the Care to Read Room. We are embarking upon our segment this week talking about reclaiming the feminine and the religion in the medicine of the Bible and talking about those women who were involved in spiritual things. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to go to commercial right now so I can compose myself and let's listen to those children sing Kwanzaa songs. Are you ready? Well, I guess what we'll do is let them talk about the power and see what these children have to tell us today. You know, we are a winner, you know that. So we'd like to hear from our children today, and sometimes it's good to hear them sing and tell us different things. So let them tell us about Kwanzaa, and we'll go to station identification. Aren't they great fellows? They are such great fellows, ladies and gentlemen. We are getting ready for Kwanzaa holiday, and you know we ought to be shopping in our community, and we ought to be circulating the dollar more than just one time in our community. It's very important that you remember during this holiday season that you don't just go out and blow all your money just because something is on sale. Plan in advance, make decisions of where you're going to shop at and how you're going to spend your money, because you know it is important for the African-American to keep the small businessman working in the community by purchasing his materials and patronizing him. He can tell you himself, I'm going to put them right in the atmosphere.
shop owner. I want your business. What must I do to convince you that I'm here to service you? I live in the neighborhood, and my ways are just as good. Why don't you come and support me the way you know you should? My brothers who got all their wealth. They say God bless the child who's got his own. Though a child be blessed, he can't do much alone. Who can I turn to if I can't count on you? What is a small businessman to do?
Became so caught up
that I was unable to achieve. But deep within my heart, oh, the answers were in me. And I made up my mind, oh, to define my own best destiny. And I, I looked at my environment, then wondered, I wondered where the fire went. What could have happened to what we used to be? I hear so many cries for help, people that are outside of themselves. Now I know the answer, it lies deep within me. But deep within my heart, oh, the answers were right there in me. And I made up my mind to define my own best destiny. And I, gonna define my own destiny, my own destiny, my own destiny. Define your own destiny, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm just not talking to the women. I'm talking to the males as well. Today's segment is featuring Reclaiming Your Feminine Religion and Medicine. And ladies and gentlemen, we are going to be talking from a perspective of question and answers. So don't hesitate to call in, pose your question, make your statement, comment. That line needs to start flashing about now, 646-478-0270. And let's get right into the topic, ladies and gentlemen. We do have Baba with us this evening. Jamel Harvey is going to be featured in this segment of The Talking Cure. And as I begin to open up the airways and the lines, let me get my composure together. Now, when I came up with this particular topic of reclaiming, first of all, we have to establish what is ours. Now, I know you remember when I said I wanted our stuff back. And I aim to claim what our stuff is and to get it back. Now, we're talking from a spiritual perspective. Now, before we get on with all of these things, I want to read you a little something from what the Africans had printed about Ifa, okay? And I want you to understand that we are still coming from an African, a Yoruba perspective. And some of you may not have heard what I had to say about perspective in the past, but I just want to give you a little take on it, okay, so that you can get an idea of what it is we believe in and how we believe in this information, because there's a lot of people that are not familiar with African spirituality and what it means, and as a matter of fact, we're just as jinxed as some of our Caucasian brothers and sisters. What the Yoruba believe, there is one supreme God, and I repeat, there is one supreme God and not many gods. And there is no devil, ladies and gentlemen. We believe there is no devil except for the day you were born and the days you are supposed to die. There is not a single event in one's life that cannot be forecasted and, if necessary, changed. Your spirit lives on after death and can be reincarnated through the blood relative. You are born with a specific divination service as to the roadmap to your path. So you're born with a destiny, ladies and gentlemen. Our ancestors exist and must be honored, respected, and consulted. The Orisha's forces are the nature forces that live within us and deals with the affairs of men. You must never serve and initiates harm to another human being or to the universe, which you are a part of, a spiritual, physical, mental, and emotional realm of your existence must also work together and be a balance in your life in order to sacrifice and guarantee success. What the Yoruba do not embrace, what we do not believe in and we reject, is as follows. We are born in sin. We don't believe that you're born in sin and shaped in iniquity. And we don't believe that Europeans have civilized the Africans. We don't believe that, ladies and gentlemen. We don't believe that one bit. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to also say that it is very important that we understand that Africans have a belief that civilization was brought here on earth by the Africans. They were civilized by the mothers and fathers of the world. So how can someone who was born at a later date and introduced at a later date be civilizing the African? So therefore, we do not believe that the reasoning came from the Greek. We believe that reasoning was given by the African. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to go to station identification right now because we're going to get ready to go right into our topic. So bear with me as I go into station identification. Mighty Race. Thank you so very much for joining us, and we're back. And we're going to get ready to go right into the atmosphere. We're going to borrow your world for approximately an hour and a half, and we'll give you your world back to you. Once again, our topic, reclaiming the feminine and religion. And the last portion of our beliefs is that we do not believe that there's only one way to get to God, and that is through Jesus Christ. We know that there's many ways that you can be saved and not the only way of the Christians. So that is our belief, and there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, I'd like to introduce our topic, reclaiming the feminine in religion and medicine. Now, let's break that down. First of all, we have to identify what is ours. And if you look at the Bible, it talks quite a bit about those who were able to possibly be used by God. And as you know, they talk quite a bit about the men, Moses, David. And then they may every now and then talk about women like Bathsheba, who had some negative views about who she was. However, there were doctors in the Bible, the mutilated Bible. There were doctors who were feminine. And we have to reclaim that position as doctors and the first doctors, I might add. And the feminine part of women is not as important as to the roles we played in religion. We were the healers of the world. We were the doctors of the world. And there is substantiation of evidence to support this. Now, I must also offer a disclaimer. These views do not necessarily depict the views of Block Talk, nor accentuate the views, nor of Project 2019. However, these are views of Omis and also of the tribe, where there were African women who were doctors, known medicine women, who were the healers of the world. And we're going to throw out some questions in the audience to talk a little bit about those specific doctors. As we know, Africans believe in ruling in duality with the female entity as well as male. They believe in perfecting whatever they did, meaning they would master the skills and art of medicine. And you might not know this, but the father of medicine, Hippocrates, that they may have indicated Hippocrates being the father of medicine. I don't know if you're familiar with Imhotep, but Imhotep was the father of medicine, who was an African man who actually built the stair-step pyramid and had a mass. He was a master god because he mastered sculpting as well as building the stair-step pyramids, as well as being a naturalist in holistic healing. Now, however, there were women that preceded him that were also medicine doctors in the Bible and in the ancient time. I'm going to bring Jamel in on the discussion and ask him to lead us off of the discussion this evening. And we're going to say hello to Jamel. He's in the atmosphere. Jamel, hello. How are you doing this evening?
Yes, greetings and peace and blessings to the audience.
I hope that you were able to hear us clearly about the topic, reclaiming the feminine in religion and medicine. And we're going to specifically reference to the Bible, because that's where we're taking our referencing point, which is where most Christians reference from. Can you, Jamel, give us any particular known women that you can think of that were claimed to be medicine doctors who had the ability for healing?
I have to go over the Bible, since the Bible receives everything from the walls of Kemet in Egypt.
And we could barely hear you, Jamel. Can you speak up just a little?
Yeah, can you hear me now? Is that better?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's better.
Yeah, I have to give you, I have to skip over the Bible, because the Bible, the progenitors of the Bible is ancient Egypt or Kemet. Everything in the Bible are stories that were taken from the Egyptian cosmology, if you will. So with that said, we have to look at, and then we'll go back to the Bible to answer your question, okay? But we want to give a very strong background. And I would always do that, because Egypt is the start of the Bible. It's the start of all the religions. All the religions came out of Egypt. So with that said, you're looking at Edju, which was an Egyptian healer. Then you're looking at, in terms of women, I want to go outside of that and deal with the archaeological dig of 2 million years ago. You have Lucy. Now let's jump into the mitochondria and look at the fact that woman was here first, and women dominated the planet, and woman produced man, and woman became engrossed in man and gave up her power to man. Therefore, now you have a male-dominated society. With that said, let's go back to the Bible. The women that you speak of in the Bible, the outstanding women in the Bible, there are healing women in the Bible, but not much of the story of them is really given. Esther, Ruth, you have those characters that are in the Bible. When you go to the New Testament, who would you have? You would have Mary Magdalene. Okay, you have Mary, who washed the feet of Jesus. But then you would say, well, what healing do they bring about? Well, the story, if the Mary who washed the feet of Jesus was that of a solicitor, and right? You have two Marys, the Mary that he married and the Mary who washed his feet. So that Mary transformed her life. So she healed herself, if you want to look at it from that perspective.
Let me ask you something. Could we also say that the oils that she used were essential oil, which were a form of aromatics, and that at that time they were using aromatics to heal with, and the essential oils were a good aromatherapy, so it was a form of healing?
Well, of course, because you're dealing with organic society. You didn't have the type of society that we have now, did not exist during the time of Jesus. Everything was organic. It was real. No process, no synthesized, no flavor additives. You know, it was real. So the spices and herbs that she used to wash the feet of Jesus had to have been an organic substance that was powerful, such as the essential oils that you would get today that are not stepped on but not cut, the pure essential oils. They can also heal you.
Mm-hmm. Jamel, what about Deborah in the Bible? Was there any known information about Deborah's ability to heal? Did she do any manner of healings and have a specific role in the area of holistic or allopathic medicine?
Well, the readers and healers of that time, which Deborah was the story of Deborah is not really told in the Bible, but Deborah's work was healing the emotions in the minds of the people, and she did a good job. Prophecy is a mental healing. People go to readers to get confirmation so they can relax their nerves. Okay?
Okay.
You know, right. I guess for what it is. You know, you have nervous energy,
now speaking
you want to know.
Of the confirmation of healers, I've read somewhere that oracle reading is also in the same path of healing, that reading the oracles could also give you a direction for what aspects of the body might be more vulnerable for weakness. And in trying to diagnose, it would be to the advantage to look at the oracles and the stars when you were transmitted here on this earth. And also with the oracle reading, it could give you a more complete diagnosis and possibly indication of a substance for healing as well. So what would you say to that?
Well, long before you had all path medicine or westernized medicine, right? You had holistic healers that were on the planet. Okay? So you're coming from a organic, naturalistic healing perspective into a synthesized, non-organic synthesized allopathic type medicine, where they would take a herbal root, but they will put certain compounds with it for a quicker and faster delivery system, taking away the natural element of the healing power of the herb, but giving you instantaneous results that will only give you side effects because now you have a synthesized compound versus a root from the ground, like canning. You remember old-fashioned canning, right? Preserved. Or taking the herb and taking it in its organic composition and giving it to a person and having herbs that are aged and seasoned, right? There's such thing as aging and seasoning herbs to get the full power, make it more powerful. We don't do that today. We basically do things that are against nature in terms of healing. So back in that day, as opposed to this day, the methodology is much better back in the past times than in the new times, if that answers your question. So we can get into that and we'll turn off from your topic.
That does answer my question. Thank you. Let me take you away from the physical allopathic process to the mental and spiritual process. Looking at science of the mind, Christian science, let's zone into Mary Baker Eddy, who was a well-known reader, and she conducted a reading room, which was a little different than what we look at as oracle readings. Most of the teachings as a healer in the Christian science was known as doing affirmations, where instead of praying a prayer for healing, that they would use scientific affirmations that change the atmospheric pressures, that change the frequencies, and also we know that words are powerful, that the words in and of itself they selected had to have some amount of power, to change the atmospheric pressure and to also give the mind the ability to see mind over matter. So if you don't believe the illness exists and you don't see it, then it's really an illusion that your mind is having. And if you can convince the mind that it is not seeing this, then you will begin to start to speak words over your situation to heal. Now, Mary Baker Eddy, let's zone into her. We're bringing it into the new age now, because now you're finding a lot of churches that are really trying to administer New Age into your Orthodox church and your Christian churches, and they're talking about you can heal yourself. Another Louise Hay, which we know Louise Hay is a long-time New Age believer of healing yourself. Let's talk about some of those people who use metaphysics. Now, we can zone in on Jesus if we had to, as a metaphysicist. What does metaphysicist mean? And to our listening audience, if they had to decipher, what is the difference between allopathic medicine and metaphysics?
Well, let me give it to you like this so that you can really, really, really comprehend this. First of all, as it says in the Bible, there's nothing new under the sun. So the writers of that scripture knew what I'm getting ready to tell you. Everything comes out of Kemet means that during the time of Napoleon Bonaparte, when he went into Egypt in 1770, he basically and the French went in and looted the great libraries of Alexandria, right? They went in and looted tombs, okay? That knowledge found its way into the European theater, where by the time of 1900, people like Max Hegel, okay, Madame Blavatsky, people who ushered in the Third Reich were in possession of Egyptian documentation, the Lost Book of the Dead, okay, the Sacred Book of Maat, the Sacred Book of Tahuti, and it goes on and on and on. They won't tell you this in the sacred museums of antiquity in Luxembourg, in London, in Amsterdam, in Germany, okay? They have a lot of sacred relics and a lot of wisdom coming out of Egypt that they study.
Okay, so now let me insert something.
But
reclaiming what belongs to us, is that stolen goods that belong to the Egyptian?
Well, you have to look at the process. The answer is yes, but what they did is this. Like Marietta Baker, okay? She had a two-fold.
No, Mary Eddie Baker.
Mary Eddie Baker, okay. Mary had a gift, and that was inner vision based on her disability. She was able to focus in. But prior to focusing in, you have to remember, Onyinka, from 1770 up until 1900, there was a plethora, a slew of Egyptian information floating around the Med, Europe, and that whole European theater and the Mediterranean theater, because of the libraries being looted. Now, a lot of that was plagiarized, and people wanted profit and gain, Europeans. So whoever had the knowledge had a chance to read the knowledge and then circumvent the knowledge and make the society think that they are the heavy, that they are the progenitors of this information, when really they're not.
I know exactly what you mean. I know exactly what you're saying, and that's why we're trying to reclaim what we actually had endorsed and that was ours. And as you know, Africans did not believe in putting their signatures on anything. Even some of their artistic work was not written and claimed. So therefore, it was easy to lose the origin of where it came from. I certainly agree with you on that. Now, let's get back into the medicines and the claims of healing and the types of work that was being done. Can we break down some things that were being done, like the first type of surgery and looking at the women who were the head doctors, so to speak? And here in the traditional setting of today's time, you have something called the assistant doctor and a physician doctor. I've worked in a hospital for about 6 years, and normally the head nurses were really nurse practitioners or midwives. And those women had a lot of hands-on experience, maybe not a lot of theoretical, but a lot of practical experience. So let's talk about it.
Okay.
What
all
are
right.
some
well, then,
of the things that we could talk about that our female women actually discovered or actually can take credit for?
Let me give you a couple of names. Arista Gao and Mother Nenty. Arista Gao and Mother Nenty. Okay.
And Helgar as well would be out there with Mother Minsky.
Well,
she's also
no,
a healer.
No, I'm talking about something
after
much
Minsky.
More. No, Arista Gao is the female that put and created the Homo sapien in the laboratories of Shemti. This is
okay.
in the writings of the Gilgamesh epoch. I mean, it goes back way before the establishment of even the pyramids. This is a documented fact. But just to show you that women have a dominant place in healing and the procreation of beings on the planet was at the hands of a woman. Now, we can get into women in the Bible that did something or the recent women between 1900 to the present. Yes, but I'm giving you the origin, and they were all African women, okay? The reason why I do this is to show that the root, the seed of all civilization comes from, what, Kemet, ancient Africa. So to start in Greece is a disservice for us and its program. To start in the European theater is a disservice for us and its program. To even start in the Americas is a disservice. No, let's go back. Let's go back to a time when we were on the planet and we had rulership on the planet and we set into motion civilization. Now, what I'm speaking of can be researched and found out as a factual, as a historical fact. Okay? Now, if you want to come up to the present day, everybody is mimicking the Great Society of Alexandria, Egypt, the Great Society of Karnak, the Great Society of Upper Egypt. They're mimicking what was there. This whole Western civilization is mimicking ancient Egypt. All of it. Look at the columns in Greece. Look at the look on your money in America, okay? Look at the structure that Germany set up. Look at the structure that France set up. That's all on what? Egyptian cosmology. So, yes, we can entertain all of that, Umi, but I have to take back to where it began and bring you up, because once you know what Aristogel and Mother Ninty were responsible for, it would basically blow your mind away. The creation of Homo sapiens.
Let me also say that as we begin to look at the fact that the third eye of the woman in general, but specifically the African woman, the clairvoyant ability to read energies and frequency was a lot more keener at one time for the female. They could actually see the inappropriate behaviors in the body and could begin to tell the tattletale signs of a body deteriorating and could foresee disrupted in the harmonious body sector. So it was said that they were actually clairvoyant when it came to knowing when the body temperature had dropped, that the next phase would be the person would begin to get sick. So these are signs that we learn through motherhood. And it doesn't necessarily take going to medicine school or getting a degree to pick up on these signs, because we have innately built in our pineal gland the ability to hold a child, to look at a child and feel the temperature rates drop and to feel the coldness and clamminess in the child and begin to say that this child is sick. We better immediately try to do something to get the electrolytes up and get them balancing. And then we also need to give something to cleanse the bowel out, because we know in the bowel and the colon is where disease first starts. And if we can get that cleaned out, we can have a clean path to work with them. So I've seen where women who have this motherhood that could pick up on that were considered as healers. And the reason why I say that is because in the hospital, as a teacher coming in, I was merely hired as a technician. But because of my motherhood skills, I was able to do a lot more than the average head nurse. And it was said that because you have these skills, we're going to give you a special route or a department to take care of, and we're going to let the chaplain lead you, and you'll be up under his supervision. But it was only the motherhood that I had in looking at the human body to determine if it was expressing a disharmony and basically in giving information as to how to get that person back on track. And for us Africans, we always had spring cleaning, and we knew that when the blood thickened up over the winter, it was time to get the body cleaned out, get a sulfur, clean it out, and to get that blood ready, because during the summer months, the blood was thin. So it was a very easy thing to see that blood was very important, and we know the life of the flesh is in the blood. So a number of women never learned these things, so they didn't practice their gifts of healing. But as a young child, I could remember watching my aunts taking children, looking at the palms of their hand, and beginning to look in their eyes, like the iridology, and then going out to the garden to get the corn shucked. if they had these prickly bumps on them, they said, well, we can bring this out. If it is the measles, this corn shuck will bring it out. Giving a dose of corn shuck would begin to say, I diagnosed this child with early onset with measles, or masmelioma, or something, give it some big name through the doctor. However, the mothers who were very close to nature were able to diagnose and also give a treatment plan. This was done readily in my family as a child. So we didn't see doctors. In fact, we would see mothers go in, get the potatoes out, cut them and put them around the child's neck, let them hang there until they drew all the toxicity out of the child. And these were things I picked up at an early age, so I didn't even think to say, let's go into the doctor's office. I go into the kitchen to find things to use, and they ask me, where did you get this knowledge from? I said, well, isn't this how it's supposed to be done? And I said, these are things I was taught as a child. And my aunt was very gifted at doing this. We'd never seen a doctor. We couldn't tell you what a doctor looked like. And so I could go on with all of the remedies, but nevertheless, it internalized. And when I got book knowledge, all of this made sense. When I was able to apply it to theory, it made sense. So when I took medical classes, all of the anatomy and physiology made sense, because I understood the structure of the body. And there are some people who can see the structure of the body, know where all the bones are, the 206 bones, know where all the muscles are, the tendons and the ligaments and the glands, and know exactly how they function, the arterial blood and the venous blood, all of this.
And so your question is?
And it comes natural for the woman, I would say. Wouldn't you say it comes natural?
Well, this is the answer. It's the reason why it comes natural. Mother Nature grew women first. Women were the first on the planet. Women are the first gods of the planet. Out of woman comes man. Woman created man. The female is the complete deity or the complete being on the planet. She has two double X. She has XX chromosome. Man has XY. Man is incomplete. Woman is complete. So by nature itself, woman is given the opportunity to have everything you just said. Now, if woman allows herself to develop in this modern time to get back to her ancient glory of being a deity, walking the planet, giving birth to everything on to giving birth to humanity, right? Woman did that. Black woman did that through Mother Nature, through nature. Nature birthed woman first.
Now, let's get back on the other aspect of the religion. What part does women play in religion and reclaiming her place in religion? Knowing that women were the first gods, so that would be a respect that we should reclaim ourselves as goddess. And also in the biblical Bible to understand that the matriarch society did exist, and we need to reference more to that and talk about it. So how would we bring men up to date on the referencing of women in religion?
Well, first of all, religion has nothing to do with the God of a woman. Religion attempt was to snuff out the deification of women or the God in women. So religion does no favor and is no friend of the deity in women, of the God nature in women. Religion does not cater to that. Religion tries to put you to sleep to the fact that woman came first and woman is the first deity on the planet. Religion is no friend of woman. So from my perspective, take religion and put it in a garbage can and close it up.
Now, let me ask you a question, Jamel. It stands to reason why so many of us are drawn to the scientific understanding of science and biology, botany, and the chemistry, because in the kitchen you become a chemist, and you also become a botanist, and you become, you work with sales all the time because you're looking at the child's urine, you're looking at the child's bile, so you're a human microscope. And these things are things that we pick up on. And I was just reading about the sacred woman through Queen Afua, and it is absolutely outstanding as to how she's moved into her position as a doctor, as a holistic healer, and I think we all have it in us. So she has laid it out so well how we are to make our way around the kitchen and to make our kitchen into a pharmaceutical shelf. And I think that if most women would automatically cling to this, we would find that we would have more jobs in the area of the allopathic area of medicine, of scientific research. I have had an opportunity of working in histology and cytology, which are highly sophisticated scientific departments. And in working in these areas, it was almost by default, I would think, through coming through respiratory therapy, I ended up going to do an intern at a hospital in Chicago for research of cancer cells, and had an opportunity to do the autopsies, which really gave me a chance to have a handle on looking at the human body from a perspective of dissecting it and preparing it for specimens on the slide. So I found that most of the women picked up on these skills so easily, and they were readily able to demonstrate back to our pathologists. Opposed to the men, they had some difficulty trying to break down a lot of this information. And for people who didn't even have science or chemistry, that were females, they were picking it up faster. And I had a tendency to believe that the male also discriminated in the school system and said that the women could not learn science, they could not learn chemistry, and they oftentimes disengaged the woman from picking up the aptitude for science and math. And that's why I really wanted young women to know that you can develop your skills in math. I had to develop my skills in math. I didn't have them, but I had an aptitude for science that was far surpassing my math, and they were wondering, how are you able to do this formula when you don't have the math skills? The mind will compensate for what you don't have, but women are natural scientists, I would think. Wouldn't you say so?
Well, I just said it earlier. It is in the woman's nature. It is in her DNA to be what? Creator. Why? Because she is a creator. A woman fashions and shapes the baby in the womb, not the man, the woman. A woman speaks and communicates to the baby. That fashions and shapes the baby's behavior and emotional temperament. The baby is in the woman's womb. Therefore, the walls of the womb give comfort. That's nurturing. The woman gives. The first nurturer on the planet is the woman, because she was created through nature to have all of the attributes of which you speak of. Therefore, it is only befitting that women take their rightful, natural place as scientists, creators, as doctors and healers. That's in a woman's nature to do naturally.
Now, Jamil, do you think that...
Now, let me give you know, let me give you the reason why it's in their nature. Because they have two mammary glands called breasts. Those breasts are functional. They have a usage. In a male, his are non-functional. There's no usage there. Woman is complete. Man is incomplete. Go on, please.
Okay. Do you think that a woman has the ability to have healing supernaturally in her hands? And what is meant by the term healing hands?
Healing hands is linked to the emotional vibration that you have with the etheric realm, or the reservoir of all thought, right? There's another realm of energy that exists that human beings tap into. Case in point, car falls on a woman's child. Woman gets her adrenal glands kicks in. She can pick the car up and move the baby out of the way, right? So with that emotion, a paternal emotion coupled with adrenaline, now she's into her super, super powerful nature. She can access that without such a horrendous traumatic effect on the mind. Women have a natural innate ability to go into and beyond the physical. They do it all the time. They do it all the time. It's a natural thing that women are geared to do.
I see. Now, Jamil, let us kind of go back a little bit. I want to talk about the hair follicles, the little antennas, and the fact that women in and of themselves have been making such a fuss over what to do with our hair, and I got so involved. I wrote a poem about my hair, and I didn't know whether to grow it, extend it, or braid it, or mend it, and weave it, or just to leave it. But I do know it had some significance. When I was wearing my hair in a natural form, and the actual kink was still left in there, the original kink, you know, with the little ether. And we talked a little bit about the knife Ethernet. What must a woman know about leaving her hair natural to stay in tune with the Creator so he can deliver and give her information through her antennas of her hair?
If you were on I-80 going east into Pennsylvania and you were driving and you looked to the right and you looked to the left into the valleys, peaks, and hills in the nice summertime, bright blue light, sunlit and day, you would swear that in the background that resembled afros that we used to wear back in the day. If you look at the trees, our hair resembled the trees, the afro. What is that? The black man, black woman's hair is curly. It makes the number 9. It's a curly follicle. Caucasian hair makes like a 6, a flank, okay? 9 is the highest numeration that you can get to. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. After that, you add on, but 9 is the highest numeration that you can get to, all right? So the numbers actually stop at 9, and then it's the add-on and the repeat. We have in our hair follicle the stamp of the spiritual father, and they call it 9 ether, because we have 9 ether hair follicle strands in our hair. We are the only people on the planet that have actual hair. We have a hair.
Okay, Camille, let me tell you about a minute. Now that we have that natural ether curl or plank in our hair, what can we do with it, and what makes us so significant in having that? What exactly does it allow
it's
us to
antenna,
do to reconnect?
Link. It's your link to the cosmic. It's your link to the cosmic vibration. It's your link to nature. It's your link to the infinite all. It's your link to the Neturu, your ancestors. We don't know this because the disagreeable people who have influenced us to live in their image. Remember, the Bible scripture said, I created you in my image. Well, if I supplant myself in a spiritual book and tell you that this is your religion and worship it, that means that I'm your God. I'm this unseen God. So worship me in my image. What image am I going to give you? I'm going to give you an image of a man who was blonde, blue head, brown eyes, blue eyes, with 6 ether hair. I'm going to tell you that this nappy, kinky hair is, ooh, it's hideous. No, straighten your hair. Straighten your hair. So now I'm living in the image of my overlord or my slave master or my God, if you will, right? So the European has supplanted himself in a subliminal way as the God of the African or the black American. So much until we try to lighten our skin, we try to get our hair so that we can be accepted by our Lord, the European, because we live in his
image. Absolutely.
The black woman, no, let me finish. The black woman, in a subliminal type of way, live in the image of the European because their customs, their culture of dress, we emulate. Their culture of food, we emulate that. Their culture of hairstyle, we have to have their hairstyle to feel that we are accepted and to feel that this is okay because we have their acceptance on that. We do a disservice to ourselves and our ancestors by not being our natural selves because for so long our natural selves was painted as big lips, nappy hair. Ooh, that's ugly. We lived 100 and more years under that influence, and it has messed our minds up. We are literally out of our minds to think that our natural, beautiful nose, lips, and hair have to be looked upon as ugly. A pointed nose and straight hair gives you a beautiful look in the past in this society. That day,
and Jamel, I would like to make an assertion here. One of the things that African women have to understand is that if we are totally out of our mind and in somebody else's mind, then truly we need psychological rearrangement. We need debriefing. And so many times people have said we don't need reparation. Oh, yes, we do. We need debriefing in the worst way because we have been rearranged to think that straight hair is good hair and rearranged to think that fair skin is good skin. not knowing that if you don't have melanin in your skin, you don't have the ability to have a great immune deficiency to fight off diseases. And what we've really done to ourselves is diabolically rearrange ourselves. And it's no wonder to us that Michael Jackson would rearrange himself to the fifth or the 100th degree, because he did the thing. He really did the doggone thing. He went up the ladder with the skin tone. And if you have a problem looking in the mirror at yourself and seeing dark skin and kinky hair, then you are going to turn inwardly on yourself and you begin to self-destruct. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. But nevertheless, we've got to do something about rearranging our people's mindset. Therefore, there needs to be debriefing sessions. So our next segment that we're working on coming up will be debriefing sessions. So we're going to be able to allow people to go through a debriefing session to really help to debrief themselves from the cosmic internal belief systems that we hold that is destroying us supernaturally. And we don't even know subliminally that we're doing it. When we go into a place and look at a sister with an afro and turn our nose up and stare at her and begin to wonder, you know, why is she wearing her hair like that in these days when you can get your hair straightened and relaxed? And then you find maybe four or five women who have done this relaxing thing so much that now they don't even have hair left to even braid. But yet they'll look at a sister with an afro like myself and say, you know, I mean, when you going to get that straightened out? We can, you know, I can change your life. I can help you get that together if you come on in the shop. And I look at them and say that I'm going to go home and braid my hair, because the natural ability of staying close to the Creator allows me to hear from him probably more frequently than the person who's trying to be white. Now, I've heard the term acting white. And children have picked this up, and if you talk proper or articulate and don't burst the verbs and you try to, you know, get your verb and your noun to agree, you got children saying, oh, you're acting white. And they've even given that over to the Caucasian and say that that is their stuff, talking proper, acting white. So we've got to come out of this stuff about acting white, because really acting white is changing and bleaching your skin and straightening your hair. That's acting white. Wouldn't you say so?
Well, there's nothing wrong with pronouncing the language properly. Okay, so we're caught up on semantic and light conduct, meaning straight communication, proper communication versus ghetto slang and ghetto wisdom. So it's just a thing of balancing out that which is right and that which is incorrect. It is incorrect to mispronounce anything. You want to pronunciate your words correctly. We must teach our children there's nothing wrong with proper pronunciation. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with not being slouchy, lazy, and coming across looking slouchy, because sloth is one of the seven deadly sins, as they talk about. So we've got a lot of education to do. We have a lot of upgrading to do. I say this, and I'm going to always echo this. The black Christian church has to upgrade itself, or it will wither away like fall goes into winter. I will repeat that. The black Christian church must upgrade itself, or it will wither away like fall goes into winter. It will die. And it's beginning to die now. When you have the leaders
now,
of the black Christian church.
You said a mouthful, Jamel. And one of the other things that I have to give the church credit for, they could take full credit for this, and we have to understand that we can be materialistic and we can also be spiritualistic, but nobody wants to be spiritualistic. They all are gravitating to be materialistic. And the church is the fault of this. The more you can get and the more you can stockpile, the greater you must be, because they exemplify
well,
that. We need to go to the churches and ask them to change their dialogue about stockpiling stuff and stop leading the bandwagon in buying stuff and things, so that they can get this out of the young people's mind that the more stuff I have, the powerful I am.
Well, it's real simple. It's real simple. Did Jesus preach a prosperity? Did Jesus have a prosperity ministry? And I rest
not
my case.
Not that I know of.
So you know, where did this prosperity ministry stuff come from? But neither here nor there, we're on something very good. Let's don't diverse to that because, you know, this is not bad.
Well,
we
definitely don't want to do that
church
because
definitely
that
needs
is
to upgrade
for another whole, that's for another whole discussion, and I'm sure the ministers know they need to address that. Now, let's get back on our topic once again, reclaiming the feminine in religion. Now, I would say that if we are going to reclaim the feminine in religion, then we would acknowledge those women who fought courageously in battle, and Hatshepsut was one of those women who put on garments and clothing to look like a man, even though she was a female and she clearly knew it. But in order to ward off some of her attackers, she dressed in the form of a man so they could see that it was a man in the house to scare them off. But she courageously fought. And there was another sister in the ancient days that fought so tough that she lost her eye in one of the wars. Do you remember who that was?
No, I do not. I do not.
Okay, but in the ancient time, there were many, many women who courageously fought on the battlefield. And I had the occasion of meeting quite a few women overseas in the military who were fighting on the battlefield. But unfortunately, to my surprise, these women were struggling with JAG in the court system because they had signed contracts for a term, and when their term was up, they were sort of blackballed into staying longer. So they were actually in litigations fighting cases to get out of the military. And it's a little unknown fact where it hasn't hit the news and no one has been talking about it, but these women, children are left in child care centers, and sometimes they have to get power of attorney to take their children while they're away out in the battlefield. And it becomes a really bad problem because a lot of these women have done their term and they're trying to get out, and they're stuck in a system where they're fighting a legal JAG case just to get out of the military. And I'm going to say in reclaiming the feminine in the churches, you know, there's a big problem right now where women cannot, some churches will not let women become deacons. And then there's other churches who are letting women become apostles, and they're really doing the doggone thing, letting women become apostles and anything else they want. However, there's some of these holiness churches that will not accept women as deacons in the church, and they fight and struggle for these roles and positions in the church when, in fact, they don't realize we run the church anyway, so we really need to take our rightful places.
Well, only the bottom line to all of that is real simple. Other than the writing of some letter that was put into the Bible by some man, let me ask this question. Does anybody know where in the Bible the God of the Bible told women, not some man speaking, but God Almighty in the Bible directly speaking to women and telling women to stay in their place? You have to show me that, not what some man said in a letter and one of these books of the Bible, and they want to say, pass that off as the word of God. Show me where God Almighty told a woman to stay in her place and don't do the things that you're talking about. That's not in there. Again, religion does no good service for women. Religion makes women subservient, slave, and give men the right to lord over women. That is not the correct
and you know what, Jamel, you are so right. I've even seen women who get behind those statements of making a woman subservient and go out and market her own destruction and fight for the causes to put women 3 feet back of a man and to stagnate them even more, and don't even know that they are character assassinating themselves, and they're marketing their own destruction. And they'll say, well, this is what my husband has taught me, or this is what I think should happen. And they're being obedient to their man by carrying out this destruction. It really needs to stop, because you have so many women that are in these different religions who are very good leaders and have great ability to lead and to do things, and they take that as a weakness and use it to their advantage to market these low self-esteem type of curriculums. Then you got the women walking around that style, not, you know, if they write in the Bible, don't braid the hair, don't look good, try to look that style and look homely. This kind of stuff definitely couldn't have came from God. It had to have come from a man that was afraid that a woman was going to advance herself.
Thanks. Absolutely. Again, I mean, we're being repetitious here. you know, women were first. Women created men, and how dare men, you know, but woman fell in love with the testosterone of men and became subservient to men over time. So women have to regain their power. That particular time period on Earth is coming back. There's a lot of change in the air. You can feel it. Everybody knows it, and everybody sees it. So the Earth is rebalancing itself, recalibrating itself.
The Earth is coming back. Thank you so much for telling me that. And ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. And you heard it here in the Care to Read room. The Earth is coming back to its original state. Women will begin to start to feel something different and feel that truly they were the first woman and first called person to do the work with the master, and we probably were at the right hand of God when he was creating. And they're going to begin to feel a reason to call for the moment in woman, because they're going to be pregnant with destiny and pregnant with purpose, and you're going to see their destinies fulfilled. And they're going to have missions all over the place. And I'm just going to prophesy that, because you can only hold down the truth for a little while before it rises to the top. And you're seeing it all over in every place that you go. So all of this nonsense and ridiculous work that we're doing out in the community, fighting against ourselves, wasting a lot of valuable time, stockpiling materials and stuff and things, and going against our brothers and sisters and killing them over a little bit of chump change, all of that is going to be put to an end, because the type of level that we're going to is where we can transcend flesh and blood. And where we're getting ready to go to, there won't be any need for flesh and blood or material things. Your homes that you create, you're going to create it out of your frame of reference. The bigger your frame of reference of consciousness, the greater your assets. If you have no consciousness, guess what? You cannot produce any assets. This should grab the black man and black woman and grab them to the point where they're devastated. You mean to tell me if I get consciousness, I can build from my perspective of consciousness and develop houses, business, and develop my establishment? Certainly, it's going to come a time that outside of these bodies which hold us captive, this prison that we're in right now, this habitat, we are going to be powerful in the realm of the spirit. And through our consciousness, our cosmic development that we have created, where we can see into the lives and see what it is we need, our frame of reference, we want to build out of our frame of reference our cars, our material thing, our houses. And if you have no consciousness, you're going to be left behind. You won't be able to even build a habitat for yourself to stay in. Now, the reason why I'm saying that, it was already foretold. This is a prophecy that's getting ready to go forth. How much more can you reach a boiling point? What else can you do to your clothes with the sagging? What else can you do to looking the part of a child, of desecrating yourself to look like you are not a respectable man standing upright? You're almost in a position of prostrating yourself. You're almost down to the ground. So what next? What other outfit can you create to make yourself look docile? So we only can look up. And when a man can look up, he can get up. It's time for that great getting up time where we can frame our own references with our own thought pattern and our consciousness. So coming to this room is going to help you grow and develop your consciousness so you can create from your frame of reference. And the greater your consciousness, the greater your institution, the greater your attributes, the greater your institutions, the greater your houses, and the greater the assets you leave behind for your children. Remember, you can't die now. And when you transition into the spirit, you're here forever. You're going to reincarnate. And whatever it is that you reincarnate into, I don't know how many times you've been back here on this earth or whether or not you learned your lesson from the first time or not. But we want to reincarnate and come back in a higher state, not a lesser state or a lower state. But you have to build your consciousness. You have to. You simply have to, or else you are going to dissipate and you will be no more. And on that note, I want to thank our listening audience. I want to thank Jamel for being a part of the show. I want to thank you for allowing us to come into your living room. And we say thank you so very much. And please do join us tomorrow for tomorrow's segment. And we're going to go right into the thing tomorrow. That'll be Sunday. And ladies and gentlemen, you've had Omi Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I wasn't in rare form yesterday. I didn't get a chance to kick it up and keep the party going. But tomorrow we're going to have it on. It's going to be on and live. So please join us tomorrow. We'd like to say thank you and have a good evening. And oh, dabble, baba booey to you, y'all. See you tomorrow. Goodbye. Goodbye, Jamel.